Donna Winger was snuffed out of the seemingly perfect life that she had built for herself. Hang on for this one, because this is one of those, but wait, there's more, stories. I'm Reagan Snyder, and this is the story of Donna Winger. Mark and Donna Winger were a very happy couple. Donna was an OR tech and Mark was a nuclear engineer. And while Mark was soft-spoken, Donna was outgoing, and they were just kind of the perfect balance for each other. They had a great relationship, and in 1989, they got married. Their lives were full, but there was one thing missing for them, and that was parenthood. Donna was not able to have any kids, and so she and Mark decided to just embrace what they had, and they filled their lives with their friends, their family, each other. They were really involved in their Jewish church's community, and they were happy. But after several years of marriage, they got some news that was going to change their lives. A teenage girl at the hospital where Donna worked had just given birth to a baby girl, and she was going to put her up for adoption. So when Donna found this out, she was like, oh my gosh, I want to adopt her. Her and Mark jumped on the opportunity to become parents, and things went smoothly. And on June 1st, 1995, they were able to welcome their new daughter, Bailey, into their family. Donna was so happy. She felt like Bailey had always been meant to be hers. On August 23rd of that year, 1995, Donna and Bailey got off of a plane and they were ready to get home. They had been in Florida visiting with Donna's family, her parents, her stepdad, her sisters, and it was a great trip, but they were ready to get home. They flew into Missouri. Donna and Mark lived in Springfield, Illinois, so it was still a two-hour drive away from the airport. And Donna was a new parent to a brand new baby, so her parents hired her a driver so that she didn't have to worry about driving and tending to a newborn. She could just sit there and take care of Bailey and be driven home and just rest for the rest of her trip home. Donna exited the airport. She stepped out onto the curb with Bailey and her luggage, and she quickly found her driver. He was waving at her, kind of calling her over. And when they met, he got out of the car and loaded up Donna's luggage, and Donna buckled Bailey into the car. And once they got on the road, it became clear that this driver was of the chatty variety. He had some things on his mind and he wanted to talk about it. And for the first little bit, they made small talk. His name was Roger Harrington. He lived in the area. And after a few minutes, Donna was like, I just want to ride in silence. And you can't blame her. It's like when you go get a massage and they just talk and talk and talk. Don't you hate that? So Donna tries to give Roger the hint. She was giving him short replies, but he just was not picking up what she was putting down. Instead of getting the clue, instead of shutting up, his comments and his questions made a sharp turn into Creepyville. He started flirting with Donna. He was telling her that he liked her tan and talking about things that made her super uncomfy. He told her that he liked older women and invited her to one of what he called his sex parties. She finally was like, hey, listen, I'm tired. We've been traveling. I have this newborn. I just want to relax while my baby's asleep. But Roger just... The dude doesn't know how to read a room. Roger just kept talking about inappropriate things and making Donna uncomfortable. And the ride went from uncomfortable to terrifying when Roger started driving faster and erratically. And he started to tell her about the voice in his head, Dom. Dom told him to do bad things. And most recently, Dom had started telling Roger to hurt people. And so Donna's in this car with her brand new precious baby going 75, 80 miles an hour in the back seat, has no way to get out. She's stuck. And so all she's doing at this point is just hoping and praying that this Roger dude wasn't going to do anything to hurt her or her baby. And thankfully he didn't. Roger finally pulled up to Donna and Mark's house. It's a nice red brick house. And so she hurries and she unbuckles Bailey's car seat. She gets herself out and she takes Bailey inside first and foremost, and she sets her inside and she comes out. She rushes to get her luggage and she just jets inside, closes and locks the door, and looks out the peephole to make sure that Roger's not following her or doing anything weird, and he finally left. Mark was home. He had been in the basement on the treadmill, and he came up to greet Donna and Bailey and was like, "What's wrong?" when he saw Donna, because Donna is freaked out. She's in this state of distress. And Donna's like, "Oh my gosh, I just had the craziest, scariest, weirdest ride of my life." And she filled him in on what happened and all of the weird and creepy comments that this guy had made, and that she was just scared, but she was glad to be home and that they were safe. But just like any husband and father would be, upon hearing something like this, Mark was pissed. He couldn't believe that this guy would put his family in danger and that he would talk to his wife so inappropriately. And this was the 90s, so there was no Uber. You couldn't give your driver a bad rating. They couldn't just log in on their phones. And so Mark was like, "Listen, why don't you just write down everything that happened while it's fresh in your mind, so that if we decide to report him, we have all the information." So Donna's like, "Yeah, okay, that's a good idea." So she writes it all down. They put the whole ordeal to the side and just decide to be a family and enjoy being back together again after her trip, and things were fine. The day went on as normal. And so did the next day. Everything was normal. The next day went as normal too. Donna was still on maternity leave and Mark went off to work. And their nerves over what happened the day before had settled. They put it in the past, they're moving on. But then that night, they got a call that kind of shook them up again. Mark picked up the phone, but whoever was there had hung up after a few seconds without saying anything. So he hangs up the phone and he's like, whatever. He just kind of brushes it off, thinking maybe it was a wrong number or something. But then it happened again, and they couldn't help but think that this had to be Roger. And the idea that he was now stalking Donna really, really put them on edge. By the next morning, they were still nervous and bothered by these hang-up calls. They were just creeped out, and they decided that they would go ahead and file a complaint with Roger's employer. So Mark called BART, which is the transportation company that Roger worked for, and he made an official complaint. He told them that Roger had been inappropriate with his wife and that her ride with him was scary and really uncomfortable, and the company gave Roger a 6-month suspension. But things still didn't improve for Mark and Donna after that. They kept getting the same hang-up calls all throughout the whole next week. And Mark's getting mad. He's like trying to defend his family and make sure that they're safe and that this guy will leave them alone, and he's not. And so he's like, "You know what? I'm going to take matters into my own hands." So he dug out the paperwork that Roger had given Donna after her ride, and he found his phone number on it. And he calls it up, and when Roger answered, Mark threatened him. He told him that if he didn't stop harassing his family, he was going to call the police and get them involved. And so the threat is out there. Now they just kind of had to wait and see what happened next. Well, it didn't take long for things to transpire. That afternoon, Mark was in the basement getting workout in on his treadmill, and he heard a thumping sound coming from upstairs. So he gets off the treadmill and he walks upstairs and he goes into the master bedroom and he finds Bailey in the middle of the bed, but Donna wasn't there. And this struck Mark as really, really weird, because Donna would never leave Bailey in a position to hurt herself. She's a newborn, you know, she's probably rolling at this point. She could roll right off the bed. And so while he was in the room processing the fact that Bailey was in there alone on the bed, he heard another thump, and it was coming from the other side of the house. So he put some pillows around Bailey to make sure that she didn't fall off the bed, and he pulled a pistol out of his nightstand, and he quietly walked out of the bedroom and made his way down the hall and into the dining room where he thought that the thumping sound was coming from. In the dining room, he found Donna on her knees, and standing behind her was a man that he didn't recognize, and he was beating his wife with a hammer. And so upon seeing this, Mark fired 2 shots into the man's head and ran over to Donna. He rolled her over and he's trying to help her to see what state she's in. And as he was tending to Donna, her attacker started to move. And so in a panic, Mark grabbed the hammer that he had been using against Donna and he smashed him as hard as he could right in the chest. And that seemed to do him in. So Mark turns his attention back to Donna, and she's not responsive. So Mark picks up the phone. He calls 911 immediately. He tells the dispatcher that there was a man who had been beating his wife, and so he shot him. And police and medics arrive right away, and they find just a very gruesome and heart-wrenching scene. There was blood everywhere, and Mark was sobbing over his wife's body. Both Donna and her attacker were rushed to the hospital, but both of them died within the hour. In his conversation with the police, Mark was a sobbing, snotty mess, but it finally dawned on him that the attacker had to have been Roger Harrington. The police had found his ID in his wallet at the crime scene, and they confirmed that, yes, it was Roger Harrington. And the police were familiar with Roger. One of the detectives on the case, his name was Detective Cox, had rented I think he owned a trailer park, and he rented a trailer to Roger and his wife, and he knew Roger to be very volatile. And they also knew that Roger had been a psychiatric patient, and he didn't have a criminal record, but they did have to respond once before to a domestic dispute involving him and his wife at the time. Knowing all this, Detective Cox thought, yeah, Roger very well could have gone over to the Winger's house to try to convince them to talk to his employer so that he could get his job back, and gone into a rage and landed them in this position. They believed that Roger had snapped and murdered Donna and left her family in pieces. In the months following Donna's death, her family in Florida all took turns coming out to Springfield to help with Bailey, while Mark tried to put his life back together and figure out where he was going from this point. And Donna's family was obviously dealing with immense grief, but they also understood that Mark was too. They really liked Mark. They cared about him, and they knew that his grief must match theirs. Mark had turned to drinking heavily, and after some time, Donna's mom, who wanted to remain a part of his life, and of course, of Bailey's life, that was her grandbaby, she was trying to be gentle and careful, and she suggested to Mark that he should get a nanny, a live-in nanny, to come help out with the household and parental responsibilities while he tried to get back on his feet. And Mark agreed. He was like, yeah, that's probably a good idea. So he put an ad out and searched for a nanny. It was now 1996, and there was a recent college graduate named Rebecca Simic who responded to the ad. And when she found out what happened, she just couldn't believe what this tiny little baby had been through in her 3 months of life. And she wanted to make Bailey's life better. She wanted to provide for her the very best she could. Mark did end up hiring her, and she moved in, started her nanny duties, and before long, Mark and Rebecca ended up in a relationship. Just 4 months after Mark hired Rebecca, she found out that she was pregnant with his baby. When Mark called Donna's mom to give her the news about this, she was a little heartbroken. But she knew that Rebecca had been good for Mark and Bailey, and that they were going to have to move on at some point. And so she was happy for Mark. The family gave him their blessing, and he moved forward with Rebecca. And at the end of 1996, they went to Hawaii, and they eloped in a quiet ceremony. Just a year and a half after Donna's death, Mark started to drift apart from her family a little bit. He left his Jewish faith. He converted to Christianity. And Mark and Rebecca moved to a bigger house in the country to get away from all the memories and his old life. And over the next 4 years, they had 3 kids together. Donna's case was open and closed. It was closed within 48 hours. But Mark couldn't let it go. He would still stop into the police station occasionally looking for answers, even years later, because he needed closure. He didn't feel like he had closure. Even though Roger was dead, he felt like justice needed to be served somehow. He wanted somebody to be held responsible. He wanted to know if they had any idea on Roger's motive. And this whole thing, he was holding on to it so much in his mind that he ended up filing a lawsuit against Bart, which was Roger's former employer, because Mark claimed that they should have known Roger was dangerous. And with potentially millions of dollars on the line, Bart started their own investigation into Donna's death. And for a while, nothing new was uncovered. The lawsuit didn't see much action. It just kind of was coasting for a while. But one of the detectives on Donna's case back in 1995 when this happened, he always felt like the case wasn't closed right. He just had this gut feeling that they missed something. His suspicions would be proven right. In February of 1999, which was 3.5 years after Donna's death, he got a tip from a woman named Deanne Schultz. Deanne claimed that there was somebody else involved in Donna's death. And this tip led the detective to review the evidence in Donna's case again. And in his review, he found a discrepancy. When police had arrived on the scene that day in 1995, they took a succession of 3 pictures before anything was touched or moved. And the 3 photos were put into a case evidence file and largely forgotten about. They're just kind of there. Nobody did much with them. But between the tip and these photos and Bart's investigation, there was new evidence and Donna's case was reopened. It took 2 years of police investigation for them to learn that what Deanne Schultz had told them was true. There had been somebody else involved in the murder of Donna Winger, and police were finally able to uncover the truth. On August 29th, 1995, the day that Donna died, Mark was in the basement on the treadmill, and he did hear a thumping coming up from upstairs, but it was an expected sound. He walked up the stairs to the main floor and over to the front door and answered the thump/knock that he had heard while he was in the basement. He opened the door to a 20-something man named Roger Harrington, and Mark invited Roger inside. Roger walked into the house through the room to the dining room, and he set his things down on the table. But when he turned around to face Mark, he found himself face to face with a pistol. Roger was in shock. He was not expecting this. I don't think anybody ever does. And when Mark told him to turn around and get onto his knees, he did as he was told. And as soon as he was on his knees, Mark raised the pistol and fired a shot into Roger's head. Donna was home. She had been in the master bedroom with Bailey, and when she heard the gunshot, she ran downstairs to see what was going on. And when she saw her husband holding a gun over a man who was laying in a pool of blood, she freaked out and she started crying and shaking and all the things that you can imagine doing in a situation like that, just trying to process what she is seeing. She was in such shock that she never even noticed Mark creep up behind her with a hammer in his hand. He hit her over the head over and over while she screamed at him to stop. And after at least 7 strikes to her head, she fell onto the ground. After that, Mark put on his best shooketh voice and he called 911 to report that his wife had been hurt. And while he was on the phone, he heard Roger groan. So he told the dispatcher that he needed to go take care of his baby. She was crying. And after he hung up the phone, he went over and shot Roger again in the head. And Mark knew that his fingerprints were going to be all over that hammer, so he hit Roger in the chest with it just to cover his tracks. Then he rearranged the bodies to correlate with his story, and Mark nearly got away with it. But the 3 photos that didn't seem like a big deal, didn't seem like they had much information, that ended up being the thing that screwed Mark over and brought him to justice. Roger had been laying at an angle that wouldn't have been possible if he had been attacking Donna when he was shot, so it did not correlate with Mark's story about what happened. Deanne Schultz, the one who called the tip in, had told police that Mark was Donna's killer. And Deanne was not just anybody to the Wingers. Deanne was Donna's best friend. But Deanne was a crap friend. She started an affair with Mark while Donna was still alive. And the affair was complete infatuation. They exchanged wedding rings and told each other that they'd be together forever. Kind of reminds me of somebody that I know. If you want to know more about that, check out my episode, Abuse and Its Ugly Friends. Anyway, so they're in this crazy intense affair, and Mark started saying things about how life would be so much better for them if Donna died. And so when Donna came home from Florida and told him about Roger Harrington, he was like, oh, perfect. I'm gonna kill Donna and I'm gonna frame Roger. Perfect. Mark had started weaving his web of lies all the way back to when he called Bart to complain about Roger's behavior. As for the hang-up calls, who knows? He was the only one who picked up the calls, so they were probably fake. On the morning of Donna's death, Mark called Roger and asked him to come over so that they could resolve the complaint against Roger. And Roger really needed his job back, so he was willing to go and talk about it. Deanne had never taken Mark's comments about killing Donna seriously, but after she got word that Donna had been killed, she knew in her heart that it had to be Mark who had done it. And she stayed quiet about it for a few years because Mark led her to think that if he went down, she was going down with him. But eventually, their intense affair broke up, and Deanne struggled with severe depression and even attempted suicide several times just over the knowledge that she had. She had this information, and it was eating at her, and she didn't know what to do, and she finally, after 3.5 years, couldn't take it anymore. And so she called police and told them what's up. In exchange for her testimony, she received immunity, and between Deanne's tip, the crime scene photos, and new evidence uncovered by police and the experts hired at BART, Mark was arrested for the murder of his wife and Roger Harrington. And poor Rebecca was completely in the dark. She had no clue that this man she'd married and had children with was a cold-blooded murderer. So she's trying to figure out what to do with this new information and how to go on with her life at this point, what she should do. And after a 3-week trial, Mark Winger was found guilty of the first-degree murder of Donna Winger and Roger Harrington on June 5th, 2002, and he was sentenced to life without parole. After his conviction, Rebecca divorced him and relocated with the kids to Louisville, Kentucky, and raised them into adulthood.